Welcome to episode 7 of the Conversations on Death podcast. My name is Lorena and I'm your host for the Conversations on Death podcast. Death is the one thing we all have in common, yet it's one of the most taboo subjects in our culture. So I invite you, dear deathling, to join my guests and I as we dive deep into everything death related, and in the process, learn about the many lessons death has to teach us, the living. Hi, everyone. Before we get into today's content, actual episode content, I have two announcements to make. Hopefully, I keep them short and sweet. Number one is for the rest of June, a friend of mine and I will be hosting a death cafe online through Zoom. If you have no idea what that is, it's essentially a meeting where a group of people come together and we talk about death. So basically this particular podcast, except there is no specific topic aside from death, but we can talk about whatever comes up and there's no agenda that we follow. So if you'd like to join, it'll be taking place every Thursday for the rest of this month at 7 p.m. Eastern time. If you're interested, I'll be leaving a link for the Eventbrite site for you to sign up for the Zoom meeting and the password and all that. It'll be in the show description notes. And announcement number two. As of last week, I have asked you guys, and I posted on some of my social media channels, something that I really would love to do, given everything that's going on in the world right now with the Black Lives Matter protests and all that. So I would love to contribute in some way. And so one of the things that I love portraying are people's stories. And so because I have this platform, I figured, hey, let me use the platform that I already have to amplify voices of people of color. So I would love to have a bonus episode where I'm showcasing people's stories that have gone through, you know, racism their entire lives growing up. I would love to include maybe their views on the protests going on, really whatever it is. If you're a person of color and you have experienced racism and all of the things that come with that, I want to hear your stories. These are the things that I think are extremely important because we need to realize our worldview is just one way of viewing the world. And there are many other people experiencing their realities in a very different way. And it really irks me when I see online people that completely deny that racism is still a thing. Obviously, it's gotten better, you know, from a few decades ago, but it's very much a thing. And so I think it's important to portray these stories of people who have been going through it their entire lives. So if you'd like to take part in this, please reach out to me. If you want to get in touch, there's an email address in the episode notes where you can contact me, which is conversationsondeathpodcast@gmail.com. And just send me an audio, a short audio of whatever it is you want to share with the world and my listeners and your age, name, and location if you're comfortable sharing those. But I just want to hear your story. So hopefully enough people send me enough things so that I can release this bonus episode that's very freaking important, especially in this time. So I hope to hear from you or any of your friends that you think would be interested in letting their voices be heard. And anyway, that wraps up my announcements for the day. And next up, I speak to Corey Kennard. Corey is a pastor and an activist in the field of healthcare, and for over a decade has had experience in the areas of palliative care and hospice. And on today's episode, we discuss advanced care planning, which is basically the process that enables individuals to make plans about their future healthcare, particularly at the end of life, in the event that they're not able to communicate those decisions themselves for whatever reason. And so this is something that we should all be listening to. So we talk from everything related to how to start a conversation with your loved ones about this topic, how to choose the right advocate for yourself, and resources in finding advanced care plans and creating your own, as well as what details to include. Anyway, all sorts of things. And this is for everybody. This is not just for those close to death, the elderly. This is for all of us. So if you ever needed to listen to a full episode, this would be it. And if you ever needed to share an episode with your family and friends, this would be the one. So I hope you guys take a lot from it, learn a lot, and put your asses into gear and start completing your advanced care plan. Okay. All right, guys. Hope you enjoy. First of all, one more time, thank you for being here with me today. And I first wanted to get into how you got to doing what you're doing. I know you're a pastor and an activist in kind of the healthcare field, specifically end of life choices and decisions. So what led you to be doing what you're doing right now? Just want to hear about your journey.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting journey, one that I never thought that I would be taking overall. I've been in ministry for a number of years since I was in my early 20s. I kind of, you know, began to walk down the road of ministry. But it was during really a rough time in my life in ministry that I actually got connected with healthcare. I was asked to be a volunteer, you know, in a community hospital. And from there, I just began to grow in knowledge and in wisdom as it relates to healthcare, the ins and outs of really taking care of people from a spiritual care standpoint, became a chaplain. And then from there, things just began to blossom and develop. I had the opportunity to be a part of an upstart program, a palliative care program, for our health system, which connected me with Duke University and Dr. Richard Payne. And Dr. Richard Payne, who passed away over a year ago now, was a really a giant in the field of healthcare, end of life care for African Americans specifically. And he heard me speak, and he wanted me to be a part of this program that he was developing with Duke University, and I ended up becoming a faculty member at Duke University with their Institute on Care at the End of Life. You know, things just begin to grow and blossom, begin to speak all over the country and talk about how to properly respect and care for those who are at the end of life, dealing with cultural differences and advanced care planning. And one of the gaps that we saw was that many African Americans were not dealing with the subject of death well and advanced care planning. And we began to see it throughout hospitals across the country where individuals were coming into the hospital and dying and not dying what we would call a good death. And a good death means that, okay, first of all, you were able to have the things in place that you wanted to have in place prior to your death. Two, you've had conversations with individuals who you are close with about, you know, personal issues or concerns, money issues, finances, and then also to have in place the type of treatment that you would want to have if you could not speak for yourself. And so we considered a person who had those things in place, the fact that when they died a good death. And so we began to really push that and talk about it and push the envelope, because in the spiritual culture, it was not being talked about. Many people avoided the subject. Why? Because many people who claim a faith always talk about hope and healing. And there's nothing wrong with that, nothing at all. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, what's inevitable is that we all die. We all will die at some point in time. And so it's a part of life. And when you see death as a part of life, I think it causes you to live your life in a greater capacity, in a fuller way. And that's what we begin to have dialogue about across the country. And it's just grown. And I've been able to speak on many platforms, many conferences, and small groups about this subject of advanced care planning. And it's really been, for me, a blessing to be able to share knowledge and wisdom about not only faith, but, you know, being in healthcare and what it looks like on the inside of healthcare and how I can bring those two worlds together to make someone's death a better one.
It's beautiful work. And how can, or what is the role that spirituality and faith play when it comes to these decisions? And what are some ways that a person's faith can be acknowledged and respected while they're going through, like actively dying?
Yeah, well, faith, as a matter of fact, can be a barrier as well as something that can benefit the patient. From a beneficial standpoint, what we as healthcare providers need to understand is that we must respect people of all faiths, regardless of what their faith is. People have preferences and people have cultural practices and faith practices that they would want to see carried out. And it's incumbent upon people who work in healthcare systems to respect, honor, and then ask. Ask what those things are so that they can know, okay, if it comes down to this, this is what this person wants. For some patients, it may be turning their bed towards the east. For others, it may be special covering or washing that takes place or special prayer rituals that happen. And those are all things that we must take into account to respect and honor that person who may be actively dying. And that means also putting aside our own biases. You know, we bring bias into the situation and we say, well, you know, why would they want to do that? My question is, why not? Why wouldn't we honor it? And there have been some individuals who said, well, we don't have to go through all of that. And I say, yes, we do, because it honors that particular patient. But also faith can serve as a barrier because when it comes down to it, many people don't want to accept death, accept the fact that they are dying. And that has a lot to do with unfinished business, a lot of times, more so than it does with having hope for healing. I think that at the bottom line, at the foundation of it all, people are looking for the opportunity to fulfill some things that they feel that they may not be able to fulfill because they are dying. So they want that second chance, or they want that healing, they want that hope to be in place. And when that happens, sometimes we can lose sight of reality that, you know, death is something that for many individuals depends on the stage of their disease or where they are in the healthcare process. It could be imminent, and we need to accept the fact that miracles are miracles because they don't happen often. If a miracle was something that happened all the time, it wouldn't be a miracle, right? But we look at death as being a miracle. The miracle of being able to pass from this life to the next life. What does that look like? What does that mean? Or the miracle of having the opportunity to live, period, and experiencing life in itself as a miracle and not just, you know, the healing experience maybe at the end of life, searching for a miracle there, but seeing the miracle in life can really help individuals from a faith perspective to honor and respect the transition of death in and of itself.
And I've noticed on your website that it says you take a holistic approach to all of your work. What does that mean to you and how does that play out?
Seeing the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, seeing their connection with who they are and who they're connected with. My initial approach when dealing with any patient is to find out, first of all, who they are. And that means, are they a mother, father, sister, brother? How are they connected to the community? Are they a school teacher? Are they a flight attendant? Are they, you know, all those things are, you know, what are the things in life that they actually take part in? Because when you can see a person as being a greater part of a community and understanding who they are, then you can get to the point of working vigorously to do all that you can to help them to get back to that life. So I think there's special care that goes into really caring for someone who you know their function in life, and you know how they act, and you know what roles they play in life. And then it comes down to the what matters most to them. That's the second thing that I deal with from a holistic standpoint, not only the who, but the what matters most to them. That's a key question that every healthcare provider needs to ask. Every caregiver needs to ask, not only what do I think is important for them, but what matters the most to that particular person. For someone, and I've gone into rooms and, you know, as a chaplain, when I served as a chaplain, I've gone into rooms and I didn't say a prayer because that's not what that person wanted. I didn't read scripture because that's not what that person wanted. One person, you know, I sat down and I talked with him 30 minutes about the Detroit Tigers baseball team. And he felt like that was a spiritual moment, but he said, thank you so much for, you know, engaging in a subject that I thought was important. And my thought was, yeah, I wanted to do what mattered most for him. And that's the spiritual connection that we need to make. And then, you know, you deal with who, what, when, you know, when, how much time to spend with the person. When was the last time they engaged in an activity that they loved, and how can you maybe bring that into the hospital? During COVID-19 is difficult because we don't have visitation. But, you know, what I was able to do with one individual who was sick, who was not well, but he wasn't dying at the point, but he missed his community. He missed his choir. He was actually a choir director, and they were preparing for this concert. And so, you know, I thought about when was the last time that he engaged in this particular activity. And what we did was I got with a person who knew him, and we talked with his wife, and because he wasn't responding to any of the medications, and there was an emotional hurt and pain that he was going through because of the fact that he wasn't able to connect with his choir. And so what did we do? As they were preparing for this concert and he couldn't be there, we have a very large chapel here in our hospital, and we have closed circuit television. And so we were able to bring the choir to the chapel, have them to do their whole choir rehearsal, concert rehearsal here, and put it on his television in his room. And so from that moment forward, he began to respond positively to the medication. He was so overjoyed with the fact that he was able to see his choir and that they actually came to the hospital to be a part of his experience here and journey here at the hospital. And lo and behold, he was able to be at least in the audience during the time of the concert. And I believe that what we did by bringing the choir here helped that to happen. But we were thinking about, you know, the when. When was the last time he connected with something meaningful? And then we, since it had been a while, we made it happen. And then, you know, where's that person now? How are they thinking? What are they going through emotionally, mentally? As we know what they're going through physically, what are those other aspects of their personhood that we need to address? And we'll get counselors in, or spiritual care providers, or, you know, people that can just sit with them and talk. And then the why and the how are the last two questions that I generally ask myself in dealing with a holistic approach. And the why is, why have I been put in the place to be the person to connect with them? And there has to be intention there. There has to be meaning there. I don't think that, you know, any meeting is happenstance. When I look at life as this great journey that brings people together at the right time, then I know that there's a purpose that I'm serving in that person's life. I'm not just passing them by, but there's something that I need to do in that moment to make a difference in their life. And I need to seek that out and find. And then the how is, I need to then discover, how can I make that difference and be intentional about doing that? So that's my take on a holistic approach, and is really asking those six questions: who, what, when, where, why, and how, the basic questions of life, to actually get to the point of, I believe, meeting a person's needs holistically.
That, yeah, I'm 100% on board with that. I've said this in another episode before, where looking at the person holistically came up, because I'm last year, I was I started a business as a holistic health coach. Mm-hmm. Same thing, you know, I think when it comes to health, we're always looking at the medicine or, you know, like one aspect of it, but you have to look at the person as a whole, just like the person, the patient you were just describing reacted so positively, to you going out of your way to do that for him. You know, it has to be taken into account. You can't just look at one aspect of the person. And I think it's beautiful that there are more people in the world doing that. So thank you.
Well, I'm glad to meet another person that's doing that as well. So definitely.
Thank you. So as far as preparing and advanced care planning, I wanted to get into kind of the hurdles that one may encounter when starting a conversation with your loved ones. Because I find that there are a lot of misconceptions. One of them, for example, being, oh, well, if you talk about death, it's going to come sooner. So, one of them. So
that's a huge one, too. I'm telling you, it's a huge one.
Yeah. So what other misconceptions do you think there are, if any? And if so, how do you get over those and start a conversation?
You know, and I'll start there. You know, people just, they don't want to talk about death. That's a huge issue. And it's for really the reason that you said, it's like, if it's taboo, you know, if I talk about it, you know, then it's something that's going to happen, as if we had control over it. You know what I'm saying? And if we have that much control over speaking about death in our lives, and there's some other things we need to speak in order to bring to pass as well. But it's funny how we only look at death, you know, in a situation of like that, of having power attached to our words. But bottom line is, people need to understand that these conversations need to become a part of our norm, a part of who we are, a part of life. When we start to approach family members, there are many people that are going to reject us even talking about death. I can remember the first time I, you know, began to have my conversations about this, and then I would hear from my wife or others about, you know, what they wanted, and it kind of shocked me to even think about, you know, what they would want. And that's because when you start to go down this road, you naturally think about the fact that the person that I'm talking with, I'm really talking about them not being here anymore. And that's kind of the hard thing to deal with. And so we only want to deal with the present, but life is built upon the past. It's enhanced by the present, and then it's magnified by what happens in the future. And so I really believe that past, present, and future all work together to enhance what we call this lifestyle that we are in now. And, you know, it's so funny that I think it was said in, I forgot the name of the movie, Kung Fu Panda. Yeah, for some, I know, Kung Fu Panda, the wise turtle, whatever his name was, he said a line that already exists. But when I heard him say it, I said, wow, that is powerful. And so he said that there's nothing you can do about the past, and there's nothing you can do about the future. But, you know, right now, life is a gift, the moments that you're living in now. And that's why it's called the present, you know, because it's a gift.
I love that.
And I know, and I was like, you know what? This is an animated film that's teaching a philosophical, powerful phrase that we all need to understand and live by. And what greater time than the present to give that gift of understanding of how you would want to be treated, or the things that you would want to have happen, or the things that you need to put in place in order for others in your life to begin to have a peace of mind about what you would want at the end of life. Now, what I've witnessed, if I can just go this route for a moment, what I've witnessed is literally the tearing apart of families at the bedside when people do not have these discussions. And so when you look at your family members and you're concerned about having this talk, what I want to say to everyone who's listening now is that if you don't, the peace that you want your family members to have can be something that will never happen if you don't have this conversation. I witnessed people who have not talked with one another since their loved one died, their mom or their dad died, because they disagree with what should have happened as it relates to end-of-life care. And why is that? Because that person who died never talked to them about what they would want, to give them the peace of mind to say, you know what, you don't even have to agree with me. Just understand this is what I want. That way, when a decision needs to be made, it's not the person's burden to kind of come up with the answer who is the family member who's left here to try to decide, but it is all the decision has already been made. And when you understand that the decision has already been made, that is what gives people a peace of mind, a sense of, you know, I understand now that even if I don't agree with it, my peace comes from giving them what they would want. And that's a gift of love. That's a gift of honor. That's a gift of respect. And so starting these conversations off can and, you know, will be difficult. But, you know, you need to find ways in which to do it. And I mentioned, you know, before, and I mentioned this in generally all of my talks, what really helped me was the Hello Game that served as a conversation starter for me to just go through this deck of cards and to begin the process of asking some questions that seemed silly, but some questions that were, you know, really serious. And I've witnessed people who have cried and who have laughed and who have, you know, really had a range of emotions as it relates to answering some of these questions. Questions like, if this was your last day on earth, what's the song that you would want to hear? You know, if you couldn't go to the bathroom by yourself, who would you want to be there to help you in that process? And these are things that we don't talk about every day. We don't sit at the dinner table and say, you know what? If I couldn't go to the bathroom by myself, I would choose you to do it, you know. But as a matter of fact, if you don't tell that person that you trust them that much, then they can never really truly be your advocate at a time when you cannot speak for yourself. So I think it's not only coming up with the thoughts about what you would want to happen, but it also comes down to you trusting someone to honor what you're saying. And those are the individuals that you need to have a talk with. Some people are not going to listen to you. Some people are not going to hear you. Some people don't care to. I had a daughter of a congregational member who was like, you know, I'm not talking to my mother about death because I don't want her to die. And that person, that congregational member who was dying of cancer, came to me. And she said, you know, I need you to take care of all of these things for my daughter, because and she only had that one daughter, that one child. And she said, she's not going to be able to handle things if I, you know, if I begin to really decline and if I die, she's not going to be able to handle it. So please, can you put these things aside? Here are my insurance information, passwords, all that stuff. And I was the one who had to help the daughter through that process. But it's only because that mother had a sense of mind to know that this is a conversation that I can't force my daughter to have, but I'm going to get an advanced care plan, and I want you to honor it and be a witness and help me through the process and putting the things in place that I would want to have happen if I can't speak for myself. And things worked out well, and that daughter came and she thanked me for being a part of that process in her mother's life. And she was thankful that her mother had talked to me in order to put those things in place, that advanced care plan to help her out. And so she was really grateful that that occurred. And she just told me I couldn't have done it without you being a part of this process. And I'm glad my mother chose you. So that is huge. And it could give that scared and reluctant person that peace of mind, even when it's not them. Just knowing that a plan is in place and they don't have to be the ones to carry it out, because that's what some people fear. It's like, I don't agree. You know, I'm going to do all I can to keep you alive. And a lot of those things are selfish. You know, they're selfish desires. And many times, instead of letting a person take that next journey in their life beyond this life. Sometimes we get, very selfish and saying, I want you to stay here. There's another illustration of a very close friend of mine who passed away, and she was letting her daughters know that she wanted to have the talk with her daughters, but she was afraid to because her daughters were so resistant to her dying. But she was so at peace with death. She was saying, my time is here. I'm okay. And I just really need to let them know that it's okay to let me go. And these are the words that she's saying to me. And it's hard for me to even, it was hard for me to hear those words. But she was so intent on letting her daughters know. And she said, if you can stand with them in the room when I talk with them, that'll be of great help. And so I was able to do that. She talked with her daughters. She said, look, I don't want this. I don't want that. I don't want you to try to do this. I don't want you to go against what I said. I don't want to be on a ventilator. I don't want any of that. If I go, just let me go. And you could feel the peace in the room when she said that. And the daughters just needed to hear that. They cried, but they were okay. They were okay because they heard their mother say it, and the burden was lifted off of them to have to make that decision if they had to.
Right. That's, I guess that's one of my concerns when it comes to choosing an advocate, because I may think someone might be able to handle upholding my choices when it comes to that time, but it may be absolutely different when it's actually happening and the person might still want to do something differently. So, but at the same time, I think, okay, so do I get someone that's really close to me that I trust that will do this, even though when it comes down to it, maybe it won't happen? Or do I just pick someone that's, not an immediate family member, where I know they'll have less of a emotional attachment to me? I guess when it comes to this, I'm always wondering, like, how can I ensure that the person I pick is actually going to follow through?
Yeah. And to be honest, you would have no way of knowing if you die.
Yeah.
at the same time, I think it's important for you to not just look at a person who you would trust when times are good in life, but you need to trust someone who's there with you through thick and thin, a person that is able to say, I got your back, and I honor you as a person from a holistic standpoint. There's some people that you can go to the club with. There's some people that you can go to church with. There's some people you go to the game with. But who's that person that can stand with you during, times of adversity or times of anguish and hurt and pain? Those, when you watch life and you discover in life who those people are, who are drawn to you when you're at your lowest point, who are saying that I would do whatever to help to uplift you. I'm going to get down where you are and uplift you and be here for you. There's a passage in scripture, if I could use scripture just for a moment, of Job, and everybody, whether you're a Christian or not, has heard of the story of Job and, his anguish and his pain and how he went through losing everything. But there was one passage of scripture in that book that, and it's an ancient book, that really just speaks to what it means to have those who are close to you. So in his anguish and his pain, when he lost his kids due to death and lost all of his riches, it said that his friends came and they just sat with him for days. They just sat with him, didn't say a word. They were just with him. And sometimes you need to know who can just be with you. That's powerful. And it's those individuals that I would have the conversation with to begin to say, I know you would honor me with these things that I would want, and I would love for you to be my advocate as it relates to, this process. If I'm ever in a situation where you're witnessing me in a dying state, or I can't speak for myself and there needs to be a decision made about my life, here are the things that I want. Those are the people, those who are with you. And there's some people who are acquaintances, who are nice to be around, but are they really with you? And that's what you need to discover.
When it comes to actually sitting down and writing these wishes down, what does that look like? Are there any resources you would recommend to use as kind of a guide? And one of the questions I really have is, how detailed should the plan be? For example, the card game that you mentioned, it gets very detailed. Like, do you want to have those sort of details in your plan, or what do you recommend?
Well, you know, the plan in and of itself, okay, so there's several things. I name one called Five Wishes, which is a plan on site that, people can utilize. If you Google advanced care plans, there are state sanctioned advanced care plans by each state in the United States. They have a website. If you go to your state website, there's advanced care planning or plans that are there, documents that you can actually download and begin to fill out. And with the process of advanced care planning, what you see is not necessarily the type of detail that I just talked about, like the bathroom and things of that nature. Those things go into, really choosing your advocate, and in this, if I can just go to these four C's, the four C's that I call of advanced care planning. One is to begin to have the conversation. So you have to be brave enough to have the conversation. The second C is during the conversation, you will begin to choose your advocate, who that person would be. And we just talked about the type of person that person should be for you. And then the third thing is now you begin to create the care plan in and of itself. And I could begin to talk about some things that go into the creation of the care plan, which is not really difficult, but it can be a little detailed, but it's not something that it's not like taking the SAT. So, you don't have to worry about this standardized test sort of thing. It's not that difficult. And then finally, the final C after you create the plan is continuing the thought process into the future of what your plan will look like over time. So your plan is a continuous entity. It's a living document that changes over time. So you can have a person down today, like, if I had you down as my advanced care plan person who would be my advocate, and then you and I fell out and we're no longer friends, then guess what? I need to go to that document and I need to make sure that your name is off. and my name, and another person's name takes the place, because at that point you may no longer honor what I would want. And even if I wanted to do everything to possibly live, you may not honor that as well. So we need to be aware of how to change those things. But as it relates to those things that are inside of a plan, you begin to talk about, some considerations, like, and here's some examples of what's in a advanced care plan. You begin to think about what are your ideas about death and dying, and then you what life sustaining measures you would want. So feeding tubes, you get into like a call ventilators, intubation means to have a breathing tube stuck down your throat, which can only be in place for a certain amount of time. And those are things that we have to be aware of too as well, because this is a foreign object that is going down into your lungs and it's forcing air, into your lungs in order for you to breathe. But the body begins to reject and break down when foreign objects like that are in the body. So it's only like a 7-day period or so that you can actually be on a ventilator without any type of damage being done to you as an individual. So you have to begin to think about that. And then, and it may be a little more than that. I don't know the exact time period, but it's around that time. And then you get into, would you want a trach? Because a trach then allows an attachment to be, to your throat area in order for you to breathe. But then that's an open hole in your body. And do you want to go through that process? And those are all things that you have to begin to think about if it can save your life or if it's just something that's maintaining a very poor state. And so these are the discussions. If it's just maintaining a poor state with no chance for meaningful recovery, then those are the things that you have to begin to discuss with your advocates to let them know. And I say them because it should be more than one, two, and three. I think you should choose three advocates, you know, in the process, because then you, if one person can't do it, or if they're not available, they're out of the country or whatever the case may be, you have a second or a third person to be able to go to. How you want your hair to look. I don't have to worry about that. I'm bald, so that's fine. and that's on purpose. I like the shaved head look. But also, you know, looking at the process of the things that you would want to wear. I tell people, plan out your funeral. You know, plan things out. Who you want to sing, who you want to speak, you know, be a part of that, what you want to have on. If you want to be cremated, put it out there. You know, talk about those things, because these are things that people need to know. And you begin to you have to begin to know medical terminology. And this is, you know, part of my talks as well. You know, what does a DNR mean? You know, do not resuscitate. What does that mean? Does that mean, okay, if I have a heart attack, you know, they're not going to, or my organs, my heart stops, they're not going to, you know, pound on my chest or, you know, CPR, or, you know, they're not going to do that. If I have a do not resuscitate order, that means that really do not resuscitate. We like to call it allow natural death, AND, allow natural death. That's a more compassionate way of saying it as opposed to do not resuscitate. No, it's an allow natural death. And so we try to give family members that opportunity, because that makes a difference with a person who's making a decision, that if, you know, if you're giving a do not resuscitate order, it's like you are sentencing that person to death, as opposed to knowing that you're not in control. And to allow a natural death is to basically get out of the way and allow things to occur naturally. That's all it is. And so, you know, you heard the term pull the plug. You know, I don't want to pull the plug. It's like I've never seen anybody pull a plug. I've never seen anybody pull the cord that is connected to the ventilator out of the wall to say that's it. You know, so the terminology that we use sometimes is very poor terminology. But other things that are involved in the advanced care plan is not only appointing an advocate, but talking about the fact that whether or not you want artificial nutrition, that's the feeding tube. Do you want to be placed on a ventilator? What type of surgical interventions would you approve of or not approve of? So the trach, having a trach is a surgical intervention. Would you want that to be in place? Would you want that to happen? Or if not, you need to state so. Do you want dialysis if you're in a dying state? Or do you want to have antibiotics? These are all questions that need to be asked. Blood draws, unnecessary blood draws. If you're in a dying state, you know, and they're just taking your blood just to do it. Those are things that you say, no, I don't want anybody invading my body. Or, you know, from a faith perspective or a cultural perspective, those may be practices that you do not want to happen. A Jehovah's Witness would probably not want that to happen. So or whatever your belief system may be. So these are things that people need to understand and learn about and say, okay, these are measures that I don't want to have take place, and these are things that I do want to take place. You know, blood transfusions, as you know, I mentioned the Jehovah's Witnesses, and then X-rays and things of that nature. If the care, if the treatment is futile, then you need to say, you know, if it's not going to benefit me, then why do it? But I've witnessed so many people go through so many procedures and go through so many you know, diagnostic measures in order to just simply maintain what I would call a breathing corpse. And that was to satisfy, you know, the family member who could not and would not let that person have a natural death. And so when you're able to say those things, it gives people the freedom to say, you know what, I totally support, you know, what my loved one would want. And then even down to organ donation. And that's one thing that's talked about in the advanced care plan too, as well, organ donations. And a lot of us have been confronted with that when, you know, getting that license renewal, you know, you're asked that question about that, but it also can be stated in your advanced care plan as well. I have no idea if that answered your question, but
course it did. Absolutely. So many right. things to think about. Yeah. I have, I filled out a 5 wishes mm-hmm. many years ago. And I'm realizing now that I started this podcast, I need to redo it because some of my wishes are different. Yes. And definitely the advocates that I had assigned are also different. So yeah, it's good to revisit. So once this is filled out, what mm-hmm. do we do? Like, who do we give copies to? How do we ensure that if we are hospitalized, especially suddenly, how mm-hmm. how can we ensure that these wishes are respected?
It's one of the reasons why I say it's important to have a primary care physician. Because when you have a primary care physician, you're able not only to keep a copy, a signed copy, you keep a copy, but you also would make sure that your physician has a copy of your wishes so that he or she can be knowledgeable of what you would want. And then also, when they are notified, they can simply transfer that information over to whatever hospital you may be in, because that's generally how it's done. Another way in which it is done is when you are hospitalized, and maybe not in a sudden manner, but anytime you come to the hospital, you know you're going to be here, whether it's for an elective surgery, whatever the case may be, it's always good to bring an advanced care plan, your advanced care plan with you, and then ask the healthcare team to upload it into the system. And the one thing you have to remember is that if that changes, like you're talking about changing yours, you need to make sure that it's updated in all the places where your current plan is located as well. So I would say you keep a copy, primary care physician, a copy, any hospital that you would think that you would be going to. When you go there, making sure that they have a copy. If they don't have one, if you're admitted suddenly, then your primary care physician would be the one that would be notified, and then they can make sure that you have one. Also, I mean, make sure that the hospital has one. But also, I have witnessed that, you know, having the advanced care plan filled out and having it actually on your mobile device is a great way of having it stored as well. And then having your advocate to know your password on your phone so that they can get to it if they need to. So, you know, if you're hospitalized suddenly and you have that advocate who is there and able to be there, if they don't have access to the paper copy, you can at least have them to have their copy, which they should have. But it's just say, for instance, they don't have it and they're there at the hospital with you and you know, the hospital's asking for it. That's something that you can actually they can actually go into your phone and actually get. If there's anything else in your phone that you don't want them to see, well, that's tough. They're trying to help, you know, make sure that you have what you need while you're in the hospital and you deal with those other issues afterwards.
Right. It's funny. Now that you brought up phones, something that I listened to a podcast the other day about what happens after you die to like your digital stuff online. And I think that would be interesting to add to an advanced care plan. For example, you know, like your Facebook, your Instagram, maybe give someone the passwords to either get rid of the profile altogether, or if you'd like to keep it up or whatever. But because I don't think people really think about this part of like, okay, what happens after I die to my digital self?
And well, you know what? And you bring up such a great point, and I'm going to begin to incorporate this in my talks because that is such a key issue. I noticed on Facebook, there is a place where you can begin to talk about that process. So I think that that's something that we need to share with the social media giants to let them know that provisions need to be put in place for people to for people beyond just the account holder to have access to the account. And in the case of a sudden death, I mean, if you think about people like Kobe Bryant, unfortunately, and his daughter and those other 7 individuals who passed away, who I'm sure had social media accounts or whatever. What do families do? How can they go online and say, you know, I need permission to take this account down, or it's too hurtful for us to continue to have this up. So we need provisions beyond just, you know, I know Facebook has it, but through the other social media entities have it. And I know Facebook owns Instagram and things of that nature, but we want to make sure that every platform has these provisions so that people don't have trouble trying to go in and really take down the content that their family member had up, but they desire to just take it down now because it's hard to just have that information just sitting out there.
Right. And I think sometimes, too, to look at the other side of this, it really helps the people left behind to grieve. I've noticed a lot of profiles that are kept up, you know, their friends and stuff when it's like the anniversary or birthdays will go up there and literally comment like, I miss you so much. And no one's replying, but it somehow makes you feel still connected to the person.
Right. And I think that's very meaningful. There's a person who was a real giant in leadership and faith, in the Christian faith. And when he passed away, his daughter actually maintained his website and kept his legacy going through his teachings and things of that nature. And those are some things that can be done. But once again, those are things that need to be talked about.
Right.
You know, do you want somebody to continue your legacy in terms of what you're providing? Do you want these podcasts to continue if you were no longer able to do them? And whose hands would they be in? Who would you trust to carry forth this legacy? So those are things that you know, we don't readily think about in everyday society, but we need to, because once again, death is a reality.
Yeah. And we can't escape it. It's going to happen. So let's might as well have the conversations now.
Right. Exactly.
Awesome. Awesome. It's been really insightful, Oliver, this entire conversation. And I loved a lot of the topics we touched on that usually aren't touched on. So before I let you go, there are two questions that I ask my guests.
Okay.
So number one is, if you were to die tomorrow, how would you like to be remembered?
Wow. I wasn't ready to talk about death. No.
Imagine.
Right. I think that I would like to be remembered, if I were to die tomorrow, I would like to be remembered as a person who tried their best to bring enlightenment and enhancement to the lives of others. You know, I love to inspire people. I love to make people laugh. I love to make people feel good about themselves. I love to educate people in whatever way I can. I love to engage in, you know, and just in everyday life. And I would want people to remember me as a person who is full of life, who loved others, who loved his family, who cared about others in such a way that I brought meaning to their lives. And so if I can be remembered that way and not forgotten, then that would be, you know, well worth it for me.
Beautiful. And the second question is, if you can compile all the knowledge and wisdom that you've gained throughout your life into a message to share with others, what would that message be?
So there's a phrase that comes to mind when you said that. And it says that when we are born, we cry and the world rejoices. And we should live our lives in such a way that when we die, we rejoice and the world cries. And I think that for me, that is my philosophy. That is how I approach life in and of itself. And that's how I want people to recognize my life. So it'll be summed up in that phrase that I've lived my life in such a way that I can rejoice and others cry when I die.
Goosebumps. I love it. I love it. And lastly, how can people get in touch with you if they want to?
Okay. Well, you can email me at consultclk@gmail.com. You can go to my website, simply my name, Corey, Corey, the letter L, Kennard, K-E-N-N-A-R-D, altogether.com, CoreyLKennard.com. You can follow me on Instagram at I Am Pastor Corey. You can also go to my Facebook page, which is simply Corey L. Kennard. So those are the ways in which you can get in touch with me, reach out to me, follow me, email me, hit me up. I'm available and I'm willing to talk and answer questions about this subject and anything else that you want to talk about, as long as it's not crazy.
Crazy? Like what? It all depends on your perception of what
crazy
is.
That's true. That's true. That's true. I would define what crazy is. And if you don't hear back from me, then it's crazy.
Well, now we know.
There you go. There you go.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me. It's been awesome.
Oh, thank you. Anytime. I'd love to come back anytime. And thank you for the opportunity to share with your listeners. And hopefully someone can get something out of this. And if there's any questions or thoughts, send them to me.
Hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, please make sure to subscribe. And if you'd like, leave a review on iTunes or wherever you consume your podcasts. It really helps spread the message. Also, if you'd like to connect with me, follow me on Instagram @conversationsondeath. And I will talk to you guys soon. Take care.